MedStar Washington Hospital Center presents Medical Intel, the inside story of advances in healthcare that can make a difference for you and your patients. Here's Melanie Cole.
Heart failure is a very common condition affecting more than 5 million Americans, with more serious cases of heart failure and when it progresses to an advanced stage. Difficult decisions must be made between the doctor and their patient. My guest today is Samir Najjar. He is the director of the heart failure at MedStar Washington Hospital Center. He specializes in advanced therapies for heart failure, including the medical management of heart transplantation and ventricular assist devices. Welcome to the show, Dr. Najjar. So tell us a little bit about heart failure and the classification of it.
Thank you very much for having me. As you mentioned, heart failure is very prevalent. In fact, I now call it that we're having an epidemic of heart failure in the country because of the millions of people who have it. Not only is it very prevalent, it is also very expensive. It's one of the largest expenses for Medicare, and it has a high morbidity and a high mortality. A lot of hospitalizations, a lot of people who get readmitted for rehospitalizations, and about 300,000 people per year die every year of heart failure. Now, the classification of heart failure is based in large part on symptoms. And so we classify people as class either 1, 2, 3, or 4. A class 1 person is somebody who has absolutely no symptoms. So they may have a weak heart, but they could be up outside running and doing all sorts of activities that they want. A class 4 person, on the other extreme, is somebody who can barely do anything. They are having shortness of breath or fatigue or tiredness, just sitting down and not doing much. And in between the class 2 and the class 2 are people who can do activities, but maybe not as much as somebody who's a class 1. And the class 3 is somebody who's struggling, can do stuff, but they're struggling. So, for example, they can maybe not even walk 2 blocks. They can walk a block. So they're not housebound or bedbound, but they are certainly very symptomatic. And for most patients with heart failure, the treatment, the standard treatment, involves medication. There's a whole set of medications that have been proven to help patients with heart failures, they're prescribed quite well for patients who have the heart failure condition, and they're supplemented by devices. So things like defibrillators and pacemakers have also been shown to help patients with heart failure. And like I said, most patients with heart failure do well with these. But over time, the heart failure oftentimes progresses, it becomes more severe, and these medications become less and less efficacious. So the person who was initially a class 1, for example, may find themselves going to class 3 and get close to a class 4. So now you have somebody who is really very limited. And by limited, I mean they're not able to do much. And so they're not able to live a good life. Their quality of life is not good. They're not able to do activities that are meaningful to them or to their families and caregivers. And so things are looking pretty bleak. At that point, we do have additional things to offer them. And so these therapies are what we call advanced heart failure therapies, meaning that they are geared towards patients who have the advanced stages of heart failure. And the key question is, when does somebody cross that threshold of going to say, well, I just have heart failure, to somebody who says, well, I have an advanced heart failure? Unfortunately, we do not have a single blood test that we can do that says, I measured this level, and therefore I'm going to call you this, that you now have advanced heart failure. But there are many clinical signs that can sort of give it away. So if you have somebody who's trying to do their best, they're taking all their medications, they're doing what they're supposed to do, they're limiting the amount of fluid that they're taking, but in spite of that, they keep retaining fluid, they keep ending back in the hospital. Something that tells us that there's something that's changed in this person, and now this person is maybe sicker than we thought what they were 6 months or a year ago, to the point that those medications are not holding them anymore. In some people, you start seeing, well, the blood pressure is going down and down, and the medications that we give standardly for heart failure, now we have to back down in the doses of these medications. That is another trigger that tells us, well, something is progressing. So there are multiple different things that can happen. The third thing is, well, some people start developing kidney injury or liver injury. So in other words, there's end organ damage. And so these are all triggers or markers that a person is progressing towards advanced heart failure. And in a given individual, they don't have one specific pattern of how things progress. It varies from a person to person. Some people don't have to be hospitalized. They're able to stay at home, but they tell you, gee, I can't get out of bed. Some people don't retain fluid, but their kidneys and their liver are showing evidence of damage. Other people just keep retaining fluid, but their kidneys and livers is working fine. And so there's not one simple thing that gives it away, but there's a multitude of things that could happen, and one has to stay vigilant and watch for these things, and when they happen, be able to act on them. But I want to emphasize one really important thing, is that the most important thing are symptoms. Oftentimes what patients with heart failure do is they adapt their lifestyle to what their body allows them to do. So you'll ask somebody, how are you doing now? They'll say, I'm doing fine. Then you ask them, well, what are you doing now? And they say, well, I don't do anything. I watch TV all day. And you ask them, what were you doing a year ago? Oh, a year ago, I could take the dog out. I'll walk them. I'll, you know, take a stroll on the beach and all that. And you ask them, why aren't you doing that anymore? Oh, I think I must be older age or the weather is not good. So they find excuses why they're not doing them. And the reality is they just sense internally that they're not able to do the activities, and therefore they kind of stop doing them or kind of slowly ramp them down. And so I think being very careful about taking a very good history and asking people about, number one, what is their activity level, and perhaps even more importantly, how is that activity level different than what it was before, that is often sort of the first marker that the heart failure is progressing. There is one test I should mention called the cardiopulmonary stress test that measures something called the peak oxygen consumption, which over and over and over again, clinical trials have shown that the peak oxygen consumption is the best prognostic marker in patients with heart failure. But unfortunately, I have to admit that that test is not widely available and is not widely used, so we can't rely on it. But I think clinical markers, particularly the history in terms of what is the exercise tolerance and performance of a person, as well as things such as rehospitalization and organ damage, are markers that clinicians need to be aware of to try and distinguish, well, who's progressing towards advanced heart failure. Now, when somebody is progressed towards advanced heart failure, what are the therapies that we have available? Well, we have therapies sort of are across a spectrum. For some people, it's really the end of the road. And the right thing for them to do is to help them and their caregivers and their families discuss end-of-life issues and palliation and eventually hospice. That is the right thing to do for them. For other people, we have things to help them. And those things can include either specific medications called inotropes or surgical therapies, which include LVADs and transplants. The LVADs, or left ventricular assist devices, are a relatively new therapy. Really just took off within the past 5 or 6 years. We've had these therapies for 2 decades, but the technology was not that good. So back in the 90s and the early 2000s, we had these devices that worked well for only a few months up to a year, and then they really degraded after that. And so they're not a good long-term option. But nowadays, we have a second, even a third generation of left ventricular assist devices, which are smaller than the first generation. The surgeries are easier, and both the surgeons and the cardiologists are better at the management, both perioperatively and postoperatively, of patients with left ventricular assist devices, so that we're able to get much better outcomes in patients who have these LVADs. And the LVADs can be implanted in one of 3 configurations, either as a bridge to transplant, meaning somebody is eligible for transplantation, but we're not able to hold them with standard medical therapy to get to the transplant. Therefore, we need to do something in between to keep them alive and give them a good quality of life until they get to transplant, so we'll put an LVAD. Now, some people do not qualify for transplantation, and in those patients, they can get an LVAD as destination therapy, meaning we put in the LVAD, and they're going to go home and spend the rest of their life on the LVAD, with the understanding that the reason to do the LVAD is to give them better quality of life as well as more longevity. And in some people, we're not yet sure whether or not they're candidates for transplantation, and therefore the LVAD is implanted as a bridge to what we call decision, meaning we'll put the LVAD now, and then down the line, the weeks and the months afterwards, we'll decide whether a person is a candidate for heart transplantation or not. Heart transplant is a time-honored therapy for people with end-stage heart failure. Heart transplant is an excellent therapy, and the average survival is, the median survival is approximately 13 years. But the Achilles heel of heart transplantation has been and will be, at least for the foreseeable future, the availability of donor hearts. There are far more people who need heart transplantations than there are hearts available to donate. That's why the LVADs come into play, because not everybody can wait on medications until they get a heart transplant.
Dr. Najjar, are you seeing compliance issues when they start advancing towards advanced heart failure with medications? Is that one of the reasons?
Compliance issues can be a problem in the community, and it sort of varies depending on multiple different factors. But the compliance, people who have compliance issues when somebody has regular heart failure are going to have the same compliance issues when they progress to advanced heart failure. And in general, people who are compliant when they have regular heart failure are probably going to stay compliant with advanced heart failure. So I don't necessarily view that compliance is what triggers somebody to progress per se, although it may accelerate it, meaning if somebody is not taking their medications, their heart is not able to benefit from those medications, so they may progress at a faster rate. But it's not the compliance per se that is going to trigger them or tip them over. But compliance is an issue. One of the things we didn't talk about is when we're evaluating people for these LVADs and transplants, we do a very comprehensive assessment. And that assessment includes both the medical side of things. We need to understand how each organ system is functioning. But there's also a very important psychosocial assessment, that component that takes part of it. We need to understand, is the person compliant? Is the person caring about their health? Are they trying to do the right thing to help themselves? All these things come into play, particularly when you talk about something like heart transplantation, where the resources are very scarce. So you really have to be very careful about allocating those resources, because you don't want to give it to the wrong person.
So wrap it up for us, please, Dr. Najjar. Tell physicians what you want them to know about advanced heart failure.
I think the most important point is to recognize that heart failure, which all physicians are seeing quite frequently, can progress to advanced stages. And if it's not caught early, if we let it go, then the person may get to a point where we don't have anything to offer them. But if it's caught early, in this day and time, we do have good therapies to offer patients. And therefore, the critical part is to recognize it before it's too late, because we can do things to help these patients.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Najjar. It's a very informative segment. You're listening to Medical Intel with MedStar Washington Hospital Center. And for more information, you can go to MedStarWashington.org. That's MedStarWashington.org. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks for listening.